Ahoy, friends. Thank you for tuning in to Truth and Justice. I am Zach Weaver, and you are listening to the Friday Follow-Up for Season 14, Episode 24. This week, we heard Bob's interview with Alex Campbell, the Tennessee high school teacher whose class helped solve a 30-year-old cold case. I'm joined today by Bob Ruff and Janet Varney, and we have a lot to discuss. But before we get into that, let's dive into housekeeping.
All right, so we have a few things, just again, keeping you guys updated. As I mentioned to you last week, next week's episode is going to be Rabia Chowdhury and Colin Miller, and we're going to be talking, I'm sure we'll talk some Adnan, but we're also going to be talking about their upcoming reboot of Undisclosed. So I'm going to be interviewing those next week. If you are a patron, I don't have the time on here, but I will announce it on the Patreon feed. I know the interview is on the 23rd. So on the 23rd next week, I'm going to be doing the interview. And what we've been doing with patrons, and we do these interviews, is we put those up so that you can join in live when we record them. So you'll be able to do that. I guess now is a good time to mention to anybody, if you ever thought about being a patron, now would be a great time to do it for us, as you know, we're coming into launching into this new case. And quite frankly, the way the podcast industry is right now, Patreon is what is basically paying our bills right now. There's the ad revenues are just drying up, so that the Patreon is what is keeping the work going and keeping this us afloat. So I won't beat you over the head with it, but if anybody is thinking about doing it, for $5 a month, you get all the episodes ad free. On Wednesdays, you get an audio version, what we call our pregame show, which is just an hour. It has nothing to do with true crime at all. It's me, Zach, and Janet just catching up and talking about life. If you happen to ever be one of the people that used to listen to the old Off-Duty podcast, it's very similar to that.
It's nonsense.
Yeah, it's
wonderful nonsense.
It's an hour of nonsense. On Fridays, along with the Friday follow-up, you get the behind-the-scenes video. So you get a video version of the pregame and the full Friday follow-up. So it's completely unedited. You get to hear all of that. And then we do lots of stuff like the, you know, whenever we do interviews, those are live streamed, and we do bonus content as much as we can for Patreons, our patrons. So, you know, anybody that is able to, don't feel pressure if you're not able to, or you don't want to, but if you've ever thought about doing it, we could definitely use the help coming into this new case as we're doing now. So that being said, making the transition, and it's a great transition into our next case that we were covering. The frustrations continue with that. I just, this afternoon had a discussion with the, person that does the open records requests at the prosecutor's office, who called me back because I had requested, as I think I mentioned to you guys, last week, that, they said they didn't have any evidence. They didn't have nothing like that in the file. There's a lot of work product in there, and they don't know where any of the trial exhibits are. They claim the police department have them. Of course, the police department claims they had shredded them, you know, and I said to them last week, well, you know, that's going to be unfortunate, because I personally believe the work that I've already done on the case could very well result in the conviction being overturned, which would leave them in a really, really bad spot. And I told her to pass this on to the prosecutor. As I just said, ask him, what if this conviction gets overturned and you have to retry the case? Where's the justice for the victim here? Whether you're retrying this person or trying somebody else, you have no evidence, nothing. You don't have a single crime scene photo. You don't have a recorded interview. None of the evidence you used at trial. So that was a conversation I had last week. And what I requested was, let me make an appointment so I can come in and go through the banker's boxes of what you, because it's very expensive. I mean, this will call, and this is kind of what I'm talking about. Like, this open records request will cost us thousands of dollars. Because they can charge up to $1 a page, plus they charge you time for redacting. Like, you have to pay them hourly to do all the redacting work to it. So I requested, well, let me schedule a time, and I've done this in other districts where I've gone in and let me review what's in the file, and I will pick out and tab what I want. That way, because I already have some stuff. I already have the trial transcripts. I have some of the appeals documents. I have some of the forensic reports. Some of the police file. So let me just tab what I want and we'll get that. And then I'm still be on the hunt for these trial exhibits somewhere else. She called me back today to tell me that because there's work product in there, that in order for me to go review the case file to pick out what I want, they have to redact it first, and I have to pay them all the hourly wage for them to redact the entire file before I will be allowed to look at it for them to tell me what I want. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard of that before.
What a mess.
Nope, I haven't either. So that literally, I was on the way to my daughter's softball game this afternoon when I got that call. So I'm going to try to make an appointment for the law enforcement agency that handled the case and talk and sit down and talk to them. And at this point, one thing I'm going to make very clear is, if you're telling me those files were shredded, you better fucking be right, because we're going forward with what we have. And there's plenty of stuff we have. I am confident that we could end up with this conviction being overturned. And then you can either explain to the district attorney why you don't have any evidence for them to retry it, or you magically find it and I will sue your fucking ass for claiming that you don't have it when I filed a state and federal FOIA request for the document. So there's still a fight going on. I know, so it's like some of you that are just ready for these interviews and stuff to be over and get going. Believe you me, you are definitely not alone with that. I'm real excited to put this one together. I don't remember if last week it was on the show or if it was in the pregame where I mentioned that I think I'm actually, I don't want to say any names yet, and before I do this, and nothing is set in stone, but it seems like I'm going to be shifting from Brandon's not going to be editing the follow-up for right now, because I'm going to kind of shift that little bit that we have to pay somebody to bring on an intern. I'm actually hiring one of my students, hoping at some point to be able to bring Brandon back too. But I have a student that is now trained in editing. She is a fantastic researcher, writer. She's very artistic and she can edit. So somebody that can come in, 10, 20 hours a week and help put the season together. So I'm super excited about that. She is extremely talented, and I'm excited for you guys all to meet her. Hopefully that shakes out. So that's a little bit of housekeeping, just kind of behind the scenes, some stuff that's going on. What else do we have going on? I think anything else? I did want to mention again, because there's still some tickets available if anybody, because people were asking that didn't notice in last week's follow-up, there's a link in the description to the comedy show at the Wagon Wheel Theater in Warsaw, Indiana, that Zach and I are going to be doing on May 4th. We're opening for Ryan Niemiller. For those of you that, it was America's Got Talent, right?
Yep.
He was on America's Got Talent.
Finalist on America's Got Talent.
Yep. He's headlining. Zach and I are opening. I'll put a link in the description of this too. So if any of you are in, Northern Indiana, Southern Michigan, Eastern Illinois, hell, Western Ohio, if you want to make a trip and watch a really cool show.
Very cool theater. It's a theater with a central stage. So it's in the round. So seats all the way around the stage. So it's going to be a very, very fun show.
Yeah, it's big. And it holds like 800 people.
I think 860, I think, is the total. Yeah,
so it'll be a really cool show. So
super fun.
So we got that coming up. I don't, at least off the top of my head, can you guys think of any other housekeeping stuff that we have going on?
Not that I can think of right off the top of my head.
I don't think so either.
Okay, yeah. And I don't think there's anything that I can think of that's been moving with any of other cases. I know we always get, updates on the other cases. But as of right now, we know Jamie Snow got that DNA motion denied, and that's being appealed. We're still waiting on the results the ruling on Adnan's case. We're still waiting on the DNA testing from Jesse's case. So right now we're kind of just in a holding pattern right now with everything we have in the Pinion Pines case. This fall, the habeases are due on that. So we'll see what gets filed on that. So lots of stuff that's kind of in the works, but nothing really new to talk about this week. So with that being said, this was a really... I listened back to it when I was editing it, and it's a really interesting interview for me to be a part of. Like, Alex fascinates me, and I, as someone who's, has been in and is kind of newly back into the education field, like, I'm just in awe of the work that he does. What did you guys think of Alex and our interview?
Honestly, I listened to the interview. Really pushed me to go want to listen to this podcast, and I've been binging it right now, loving it. I know the podcast is about his work. It's not his podcast per se, but it's fascinating. It's absolutely really interesting. And I love, for me, it's a little different because it hits home, as we were talking before we even got on here. A lot of my family's from that area. So I am very familiar with some of these locations they're talking about, these counties they're talking about, these towns they're talking about. So it's really interesting because I can picture, I've drove past those towns hundreds of times. So it's really neat for me.
Awesome. What'd you think, Janet?
Yeah, I thought it was great. I mean, I had listened to the podcast beforehand, and it was cool to hear a little bit more from Alex. And certainly, you know, it was a conversation that I was excited for you to have. And I think many listeners felt the same way because of what you're doing, what you're teaching your students in school. And so it feels like there's this kind of cool connection and maybe opportunity for him to learn more from kind of what you're doing and you to learn more from what he's doing. And maybe everybody kind of walks away inspired. But I think, yeah, I mean, I think, again, going back to the podcast itself, like there's some really great people in those students, you know, working compassionately, diligently, thoughtfully, meticulously, in a way that I think is just very encouraging when looking at like people growing up, you know, and who's going to inherit the earth, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's like multi-layered for me, like what they were able to do in the case and how they remained so victim centric and like made a distinct point to give a voice to these victims who, for those of you that listened to Shane Waters when he was on True Crime Binge, you know, he said, you know, the people had referred to those victims as throwaways. And that was something that was important to Shane too. And we almost had Shane on tonight. He happened to be traveling. I called him this morning. I reached out to him this morning and was like, hey, you want to join us for the follow up and talk about the case? But, unfortunately he is traveling and wasn't able to do that. But, if you haven't listened to Foul Play, Shane's podcast, it's fantastic too, especially his series on the Redhead murders. But there's like that element of it. But then also to me, as a father of four of my four kids, I've got kids that have struggled really, really bad in school, and school's been very difficult for them. I've got a couple that are just, you know, breezed by they get mad when I say that, and they're right to do so. They're not breezing by, they're working their asses off, but you know, they're able to be very successful in school. And I've tried to, you know, as I'm teaching now in high school, you know, find ways to really connect and make a difference and not just, you know, go through the motions of teaching. I'm trying to kind of bring in what I did when I used to teach and speak as a fireman and bring that into the high school level. So it's just so cool to hear him, like a veteran teacher that's been teaching for almost two decades, that is thinking outside the box and doing different things to get the kids. And it really made my day when he said that it was, you know, it's a compliment to say my classroom doesn't look like a classroom, because I'm one of the, I worry about stuff like that all the time, you know, cause I'm new. I don't know what people will think, but I just don't think that, you know, teaching behind a lectern or behind a desk is effective with these kids. So I'm always out and hanging out with them. And we'll, you know, if someone really needs to talk to me about how their boyfriend broke up with them, then, you know, we're going to talk about it for a minute and then we're going to get back to work. And, you know, but just, yeah, just to hear that, it was encouraging to me. It encourages me about our world's youth that are coming up. It encourages me about education. And I've made real world changes to what I'm going to be doing next year based on that conversation, which we'll get into in just a minute. And with that said, we should get into these questions, because I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, because I know there's some questions about some of the stuff that I want to talk about.
Sure. Yeah. I'm excited to hear that, because I know that we had a lot of questions in that made me kind of wish, like, oh no, I wish we had Alex on the follow-up. But it sounds like you guys had some interesting conversations since. So maybe that you'll be able to kind of answer some of this stuff.
With my schedule being so jam-packed lately, I've been looking for an at-home workout to make up for the days when I can't make it to the gym. And I finally found it with Total Gym. I'm insanely busy lately, between producing the podcast, prepping for our next case, and my daughter's senior year of softball. I'm always on the go, and I find myself skipping the gym a lot more often than I'd like to. But with Total Gym, I can get just as good of a workout, if not better, right in my living room. If you love working out like me, or you've been thinking about getting started, you need to try Total Gym. Do you want a total body workout in just 10 to 20 minutes? You need to try Total Gym. This thing does it all. And right now, you can try Total Gym for 30 days for just $1 plus free shipping. Seriously, a dollar. The Total Gym Fit, Total Gym's newest model, lets you do over 85 exercises in one home gym, so you'll never get bored working out again. And Total Gym accommodates all fitness levels from ages 8 to 80, so literally anyone listening to this can enjoy the Total Gym. When I first tried mine, I thought this thing must be a gimmick. Then I did a 10-minute chest and tricep workout and was sore as hell the next day. I actually got a better workout in my living room than I usually do at the gym. How Total Gym works is by using a percentage of your body weight as resistance. You set the resistance level higher to build muscle, lower to tone and slenderize. The unique design allows you to easily move from one exercise to another without having to add or remove weights. That means you can do strength training, cardio, and stretching all in one machine. Total Gym is shockingly effective. I actually get a better workout and find my muscles feeling the burn more with Total Gym than I do with free weights. Plus, with Total Gym, there's no assembly required. It sets up in minutes right out of the box and conveniently folds for storage under your bed or in your closet. Remember, it only takes 10 to 20 minutes a day to reshape your body. Head to totalgymdirect.com/truth for an additional 20% off your order. Plus, that includes a free ab crunch attachment and free shipping. This special offer won't be available for much longer. That's totalgymdirect.com/truth for an additional 20% off. And make sure to go to my URL, totalgymdirect.com/truth, so they know that I sent you.
Well, first of all, I want to shout out Kathy, our own Kathy McLaney, who says, how can we incorporate yours and his style of teaching into all high schools? And Chris W. agrees, thinks even like a two-class collaboration over a long distance could be great.
Yeah, and we're talking about finding a way to make that happen, and I guess that's a good spot for me to plug in what I'm doing. So it just so happens that right now, just kind of, you know, this may be boring for some of you, but maybe some of you are interested. So the class that I'm teaching is a CTE class, a career and technical education class, but it's brand new. So it wasn't officially certified as CTE yet. Well, we just finally got our CTE certification. So for next year, you know, so now like this week, in the last week, we've been building out what does the schedule for next year look like and what, you know, what variations and how much flexibility do I have in how I teach? And it could not have been better timing than the fact that I had just spoken with Alex. And so kind of what we came up with, I'm going to teach a couple of the introduction to broadcasting multimedia creation, which is basically the class I teach now, an advanced version of that, which we were already planning on doing, which would be the kids that have already had that class that can now go through in start doing like real like news reporting. Like we'll do like a weekly update, you know, they'll actually go out to sporting events and extracurricular and plays and theater and stuff and like do interviews, film stuff, report on that. But then after talking to Alex, I decided to add in, and I made this request and I had to do this whole pitch and it was approved this week, that I'm going to do a class called Investigative Journalism. And it will be a year long class where I will have a select group of students that will take on a real world problem. And they will, throughout the course of a year, are going to investigate that, report on that, and then build that into a serialized podcast that will get released to the public, nice. To the world at awesome. The end of the year. So it'll be a year-long thing. And it just light bulb went off when I'm talking. Cause, you know, I was like, well, my class is broadcasting, so how do I get my kids to investigate a cold case, you know, or whatever? And then it just kind of in my conversations with Alex, it was like, well, it could be investigative journalism. Mm-hmm. And instead of somebody else picking it up and making a podcast about it, we'll make the serialized podcast about it. And so, you know, I've talked to all of my underclassmen that are going to be returning next year, and I've got a ton of interest from the students. So I'm super excited about that. And we haven't made the specific arrangements yet, but Alex and I have talked about getting together, and number one, you know, me, you know, taking advice from a seasoned teacher who's done something like that, because I don't know. Yeah, I started asking around from other CTE teachers around here, and nobody's ever done anything like this. So for him to kind of help me figure out how to make this happen, like how to run the class and stuff like that, I'll be taking advice from Alex on that. And then I would really like to possibly collab with them on, if not this project in this first year, then once we get our you know, get anchored and get our feet settled in a little bit in another one. Cause I'm just, you know, I'm sure you guys felt the same way just listening to him, but me talking to him, like there's just, I've become over these last 5 years real good at distancing myself from people that are negative influences on my life and clinging on to the people that I think are positive influences. And immediately, like, Alex is just, I feel like we're just kindred spirits, and I don't want to ever let go of that connection. So he's got me hanging on to his coattail until he retires.
Amazing. Well, that actually is kind of a good segue into Sarah's question. She says, Bob asked about getting the administration on board for the podcast element, but I'm curious if Mr. Campbell faced any struggle or even backlash from administration or parents because of the nature of the project itself and what true crime can consist of, especially in a more conservative area. I also wonder if they faced issues with research due to limitations of school internet, i.e. blocks on certain sites.
Those are great questions. I haven't asked those specifically to him. I know as far as the podcast itself goes, you know, that when it was done, all of the students were adults and were able to sign their own releases and stuff. You know, it was done years later. So that part wasn't an issue. I'm sure he had to get clearance too, but it sounded like, you know, the administration didn't have any problem. I mean, it shined such a great light on their school and their programs. And mm-hmm. I think they were well aware of that. But you know, until just seeing that question, I just thought, because I constantly have that issue where I had to have the IT department give my students, just for the projects we've done, access to where I can unblock websites, because I'm constantly telling students, okay, go ahead and research this, and they're like, I can't look anything up about, you know, we were doing something on World War II, and like if I put the word Nazi in here, then it's just not, can't do it. So I'm constantly having to clear that stuff up. As far as at least my plan, because we have addressed as far as with my administration, the fact that, you know, we'll be covering some material that is, you know, it's heavy material. And we may not land on a true crime case. I'm hoping that's the direction they go. I want the students to kind of pick the problem that we address. You know, it could be a political, social thing, whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the idea was that any student is written into the class description that their parents will have to sign off releases that they're okay with them working on this type of material. And also that they're okay with their students' work and voice being heard by, you know, potentially thousands, hundreds of thousands of people around the world when this is all done.
And that's not uncommon. As a parent, we get those letters. You get those letters almost weekly about something where your student can opt out of, you know, if you don't want your student in this, you can opt out of this. Do you mind if their picture's in the, you know, it's all right. The same. So it's nothing different, I don't think.
Yeah. So I'm sure in Alex's case too, there had to be some releases. Like, we're going to be looking at, now most of their searches were through the internet. So I'm sure they probably weren't looking at like crime scene photos and stuff mm-hmm. like that, but it still can be.
It doesn't mean anything. You can find a lot on the internet.
Yeah, that's true.
Boy, you mean the truth.
There's offensive stuff on the internet?
Yeah. So I've been told. I've never found it, but so I've been told.
Yeah. Yeah. So those are things that I know that I'll have to address, and I'm not quite sure how Alex had addressed them, but I'll be finding out. I've added that to my list of topics to talk to him about.
Yeah. I'll just take this quick opportunity to kind of draw a little bit of a circle around the difference as we're talking about between the podcast that talks about all of this and that being a separate entity than Alex and his students. Sam had posted a comment about, you know, some negative reviews that maybe some critics have given. And I would just say about that what was fascinating to me is I wasn't listening to it the way I would listen to something when I'm coming at it with a critical eye for, like, how exactly was this story told? How exactly what exactly were the production values? How did it flow? All of those kinds of things I can be really picky about. But if it's something that is attacking a subject that I'm fascinated by, I'm just not paying attention to that stuff as much. I'm really interested in the process, and I'm interested in the kids. I would have loved to hear more from the kids. You know, so there were definitely questions that I had that were left unanswered. That has nothing to do, I mean, from what I understand, it has very little to do with Alex or the kids or anything like that, and is a production decision by a separate entity who may or may not have been able to do a better job. And so I just wanted to call that out because I think it's a fair criticism, but I also feel like for the purposes of what made it exciting to all of us, we just sort of weren't making it about that. We were making it about, you know, the work itself and kind of the fascination with the way that, you know, kids were inspired and motivated and really wanted to make a difference.
Yeah. And that's, like you said, completely separate from the production, which I thought was fine. Like, everything. And also, again, keep in mind, and I'll tell you this just from, you know, I'm in the loop. You're probably going to hear changes in production styles from a lot of the podcasts you listen to, because, you know, these financial constraints that are coming on the podcast industry right now for the last couple of years and getting worse. These are not truth and justice specific. It's industry specific. And so you have, you know, a lot of, I don't know from this particular production, but there's a lot of like big productions that had like production teams that are now, you know, editing stuff themselves. And so they just have to, there's just the way it is. So keep that in mind, especially if you're in, I know all of our audience is listening because they want to make a difference because they care about the cause. And so try to, you know, whoever you're listening to, keep that, just keep that front and center focused, that, you know, you may be listening to somebody who's working 80 hours a week to edit stuff themselves to get it out right now.
Yeah. And speaking of making a difference, Jennifer Lynn says, I listened to all of Murder 101 a while ago, and I didn't know he and his next class did more projects. Do you know anything more about the woman they got released from prison? I would love to hear more details on that. And Kelly had made a similar comment, wants to know more about the person in California who they helped exonerate.
Yeah. So I talked to Alex about that today. And he said, so for a long version, the woman's name was Suzanne Johnson. And he said, if you want the long version of it, you could just Google Elizabethton High School Suzanne Johnson, and there's all kinds of articles about it. But then he gave me kind of a Reader's Digest version of it. So I'm just going to read to you exactly what he wrote to me, so that I don't mess it, get everything wrong. So this is what he says. He said, I gave them a project to help get an unjustly incarcerated person out of prison. I wanted it to be a sentence that was a death penalty, life, or possibility of life. They researched hundreds of cases and decided on Suzanne. The students broke up her case into pieces and presented the entire thing to the rest of their classmates. Then, when we figured out what the weaknesses were in her defense, we broke into groups and researched each one. We worked with a health science class at the school, and they taught us more about the medical stuff. We worked with the Innocence Project and a district attorney to learn more about how to approach the case. We decided to write her letters in prison to encourage her. We Zoomed with her family to get a personal connection. Then we began to compile as much info that would show she was innocent and did not receive proper representation at her trial, and presented that to Jerry Brown, who was leaving office and considering relief for prisoners. After we submitted our work, we then followed up with letters, emails, and calls every day. She did not receive any relief from him, but shortly after, COVID broke out and the new governor began considering many older prisoners for relief to help with that. He said he would not consider violent offenders, but he saw the massive stack of information in her file because of the students' work and that of the Innocence Project, and they reviewed it and they let her out. She traveled to our town from 2,500 miles away to meet the students when it was all over.
I mean, that's huge.
It is huge. And when I was reading it this morning, when he said that to me, I was like, the process is so much like what we do, right? Like, take a big case, break it down into small individual pieces. And when you put if you have a conviction and you put a microscope on it, when you look closer, the conviction should get stronger. If you start looking closer and the conviction starts falling apart,
right?
That's part of our screening process. Like when I start looking closely and realize that the case gets weaker the closer I look, that's a good indicator they got the wrong person.
Yeah.
And they managed to get her, it sounds like through clemency, got her released.
That's amazing. Well, the timing is definitely, I mean, yeah, that timing makes sense. You said that COVID broke out. Jerry Brown was the governor of California right before Gavin Newsom. So yeah, that would be that time frame. And so it's recent, really recent.
I'm so happy. I know I didn't say this out loud, but in my mind, when I heard 2,500 miles away, I thought, that's got to be California.
Good work.
Pretty happy I figured that out. I'm guessing you knew right away who that governor was.
Good work. And then, Tina said, can he do an online class for, quote, old people, unquote? I would sign up. And Valeria jumped right in and said that she would as well. I mean, again, it's just very inspiring. I kind of feel that way about a lot of high school classes. There's part of me that's like, man,
yeah.
I kind of wish I could take certain classes again, because as an adult, I would just, you know, see them so differently and care about them more or differently.
Oh, 100%.
And then to introduce something like this, which wasn't even remotely on the table for me in high school, now. You know? Yeah. It's really cool.
Yeah. I don't know, but I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to me and Alex. I don't know what he, but you know, I'm just now learning to teach high school kids up what my teaching career prior to that was always teaching adults. Maybe we could put a little something together where we can chat something. I bet what we can at least do is do a couple of nice Zoom sessions for our patrons.
Sure.
I'm sure we could arrange something like that.
Yeah,
that's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to be part of that.
Lynn says, says, Linwood says, can we get a bit more info on the victim from West Memphis? The name perked my ears up. And I don't know if you saw that or if you had any time to give that a look, Bob, or if that's something that we need to kind of spend more time on. But
the victim's name is Lisa Nichols, and she was found along the highway in West Memphis.
I don't know. Why does Nichols perk our ears up? I have too many cases in my head.
Is it that the name does, or is it that West Memphis did?
Oh, yeah, because I definitely got...
I wrote it in my notes for this week that, I mean, as soon as I heard West Memphis and Crittenden County, I mean, it just, like, made my skin
quiver. Oh, yeah, and we're talking, like, right where...
It's right there.
I mean, right where Stevie, Michael, and Christopher was killed is the intersection of all those major highways that are all right there. Mm. Yeah, so I thought about that right away when he mentioned that. And when he was talking about the people in Crittenden County, like, the part that perked my ears up was when he said, apparently the FBI did a profile and they lost it. I thought, was there another case by those same people where the FBI did a profile and they lost it and it didn't show up until decades later?
So her body was found in 1984.
Okay.
Along I-40, which is right there.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have to believe it's a different set of officers and hopefully
It's only 9 years difference.
It is only 9 years difference. But
yeah, I mean, Gary Gitchell's been around for a while. Creep.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just. But that was interesting for those of you guys. If you guys don't remember from the West Memphis 3 case, that was one of the things that was discovered years later. I'm still in the middle of finishing Dan Stidham's book, and he was talking about exactly this in one of the chapters, how they had brought the FBI in to do a profile, and then they claimed they didn't have the profile and told them for years, the defense, that there was no profile. Nobody could find the profile, even though they had evidence that they had had the FBI come in and do the profile. And then it was found later. And the reason it was hidden was because the profile didn't say anything about satanic ritual killing, anything like that. It was very different from the angle that they were pursuing. But yeah, Dan was one of the guys that was trying to, which, by the way, I'm not done with it yet, but I'm a couple hundred pages into Dan's book, and it's just fascinating. There's so many, behind the scenes things that were going on in that case that I had no idea about. And he's kind of, so a lot of it is, so like Dan had a lot of struggles and fights with the judge and the DA throughout the time that he had to keep quiet about for all these years, because he couldn't turn them against him because, you know, he was still fighting for their lives, very literally. And now that, you know, they're out and their probation's over, now he's letting it all hang out. And it's a page turner. If you have not checked out Dan Stidham's book, it's high, and you like to read, highly worth the read.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that comes up, you know, it certainly comes up in Murder 101. It comes up very much in the work that you're doing. It came up in your conversation with Dan and in his book. Just, you know, that overwhelming feeling of, God, the powers that be, you know, if something's broken inside that particular community of law enforcement, or, you know, just the entire criminal justice system in an area, it just feels so daunting. And you really have to be willing to take a lot of punches and stay with it for such a long time and keep that hope alive, because, you know, my heart just sinks when you hear and read about some of the, you know, anywhere from the lack of interest that we see from law enforcement when people do come forward and present extremely valuable and, you know, information that you would think, like, again, it comes up on Murder 101, like, that somebody would go, oh, this is really important, you know? And right. To sort of feel like, well, are you brushing it off because you just don't like that it's coming from a source that isn't internal? Are you brushing it off because you're not doing your job? Are you brushing it off for some really sinister reason? And, you know, it leaves people to think and worry and wonder in a way that makes transparency feel like so important.
Yeah. Yeah. And that just... It certainly has not gotten better in West Memphis, as Zach and I experienced when we, you know, went down for Damien's hearing a couple of years ago. It's gross. You know, I just want to give you, I'm just going to tease Dan's book a little bit before we go, because I know we don't have a whole lot of questions, but like one of the things, and some people who really are deep in the case knew this, but a lot of people don't know this. To give you a contrast, how Judge Burnett was acting to try to stack the deck in, in favor of the prosecution for that trial. You know, Dan went out when Dan realized that Jesse Miskelley was innocent. He reached out to two of the world's most renowned experts in false confessions, who both reviewed it, who are both very expensive experts, and both agreed to work the case completely pro bono because Dan didn't have any money because the court wouldn't give him any money to pay them. And they both traveled, Holmes and Richard Offshay, I believe were the two. They agreed to do it for free because they were so passionate about Jesse's innocence. And in pretrial, Judge Burnett declared that they could not testify as experts about the wrongful conviction. They were only allowed to talk. They were very limited in their scope and what they were allowed to testify to. They were not allowed to explain as experts or at all how they could tell that this confession was coerced. And then Dale Griffiths for the prosecution gets put up with this mail order PhD who says this has the trappings of an occult murder. He gets declared an expert by Burnett and he gets to go on to spew whatever nonsense.
God, he said that a lot too. Mm-hmm.
The trappings of Satanism. Yeah. Uh-huh. So just, and the book is called A Harvest of Innocence.
And I know we've talked about it when it happened, that was 2 years ago now, but for anybody that's seen any of it on TV or seen the documentaries and how much the film crews made it look like everything was stacked against the West Memphis Three, we've seen it in person. It's horrific. I mean, actually being there and witnessing it in person is every bit as bad as it's portrayed.
Hmm.
Like nothing is blown out of proportion.
Yeah.
It is every bit as bad as it's portrayed. And it is unbelievable. When we were there, you know, I mean, I've been a supporter for them for years and I've always seen it. But there's always that inkling of like, this is what's being shown and maybe not the full story.
That's TV, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Because we all have that like skepticism, but like being there in person and just watching it, you know, we're at the door. We're part of Damien's defense team. And they say, we can't go in because the courtroom is full. And there was like 10 people that went in before us.
Mm-hmm.
And we were at the front of the line. They purposely pulled us to the front of the line. They said the courtroom was full and Damien was still standing in line with us.
Yeah, I had to tell we've been through the story before, so we'll move on. But yeah, I had to tell the cop. I'm like, well, I think you need him at least. And he's like, who's he? I'm like,
oh my God.
The defendant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they wouldn't let anybody in. Yeah, so it was, go back and listen to the episode where we talk about that because it was a horrific experience. And it was like, this is like a fucking TV show.
Mm-hmm.
How can they really be doing this in real life? Maybe we can get back on track. What else you got, Janet?
That was it. So the timing worked out that we sort of went off and talked about a slightly different topic, but certainly connected.
Good. Good. Well, thanks everybody for listening. And, I hope you guys were inspired. I really do. Like, I just want to put out positivity out there while we're doing this stuff. And I can tell you, I was truly inspired as an investigator, as somebody who works in the space and as an educator. You know, I'm just absolutely in awe and inspired by Alex, and I'm certainly gonna continue to work with him as much as he, and he's been all for it, so in our conversations, so as we move forward.
Absolutely phenomenal. And I love not just what he did with this class, but like just his teaching aspect of, he talked about it as they just every day didn't matter. Like there was no syllabus, there was no curriculum. It was, what do we need to do today to move this forward?
Right.
And then the next day was, what do we need to do today? And it was amazing to hear that and to see that.
I took some of those concepts and wrote it into my new syllabus for those classes to where, you know, it's like these kids are working, they're the ones doing the work. You know, so like in my syllabus now, the kids get every day, they get points for being there and working, and that is their daily wage. So like also trying to teach them those 21st century skills, right? To like, you show up, you work, you get your points. And I'm even going to, I have an institute in there that after so many days of points, they can earn vacation time. Because what I have now, I have kids all the time, Mr. Ruff, can we have a free day? Can we have a free day?
Mm.
Like, no, if you accrue enough, you can have a vacation day where we can relax and not have to do stuff for that day. So yeah, really cool. And I just love like taking a step back at it, the idea of, just the way he put it, like trusting these students to take on real world problems and for them to do the work and for them to do something for a greater good and to show that kind of compassion. Like that, I'm sorry, like teaching them that, if those kids come away with their high school diploma and what they learned was how to work together, how to put aside differences, to fight for a greater good, and to show compassion for not only the people they're working for, but for one another, and to show up and put in the work. Like, if that's what they got out of high school, then that is a win.
Yeah.
Like, to me, like, if those kids can't solve an equation with a variable in it when they graduate high school, but they learned that, I feel like they're going to do just fine.
Yeah.
In life. Other thing I did want to mention to you guys, as far as this week's episode, I don't know yet. So as I mentioned last week, there's a lot of people that mentioned Julie Murray, Maura Murray's sister, in her podcast. So I've reached out to, I'm friends with Sarah, Sarah Turney. So I reached out to Sarah, and Sarah has connected me to Julie, but I haven't actually talked to Julie yet. But my hope is, it's Tuesday when we're recording this, so it's going to happen fast if I can get a hold of her. My hope is to talk to Julie this week for this week's episode. If not, I've got some other ideas in the can. Possibly even, I haven't mentioned to Sarah. I know Sarah's super busy too, but I might even have Sarah come on and talk about it if Julie can't. But we're just we're plugging along, and just know, as far as the next new case, I'm throwing punches, folks. I'm doing my best to get us there, but I'm not ready to just launch into it half cocked without having the full case file. At some point, though, I do promise you this: like, if we, I am amending my, after my conversation today with the lady at the DA's office, I'm amending my FOIA request to try. You know, she's kind of explained to me what's in there, and so I can put in an exclude. Like I just need to like amend it to say, I don't need the trial transcripts. Like, don't charge me, you know, $3,000 for trial transcripts. I already have the trial transcripts, stuff like that. So I'll have that stuff. If I can't get any more, then I'm just beating the streets. We're going to do interviews, and we're going to move forward. I'm extremely passionate about this case. The person we're talking about is absolutely innocent. And what was done, which I now have a proven and a signed affidavit sitting right out in that office, what was done to them is absolutely disgusting, and I will not rest until that story is told and it is exposed. But we just got to make sure that we do it right or get there. So just know that that is coming. We're not just spinning our wheels here. Come hell or high water, this story is getting told, and that'll be coming soon. And with that, we'll let you guys all go. Thanks again, everybody who's in the live stream. Appreciate you guys. Appreciate all of you listening, and our patrons. Again, thank you always for helping us keep the lights on and pay for open records requests and get stuff done. We appreciate that more than you know right now, more than ever. With that being said, talk to you guys next week.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production. All music for the show is created and composed by Shane Yoder at PutThemInASong.com. The font you see on all of our logos and banners were created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com designed, created, manages, and maintains our website, Truth and Justice Pod, where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Pamela Westby, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Erica Cantor, Melissa Cardenas, Kay Woodyomnik, and Danielle Rohr. And as always, thank you to all of you for your engagement and your support. If you like the show and you want to support us, you can do that in a number of ways. The number one way for you to support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. If you join our Patreon, not only will you be financially supporting our work, but you'll also get something for your pledge. For just $5 per month, you'll get all episodes ad-free and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups that include an hour-long pre-show chat exclusive to our patrons. Other levels will get you a Truth and Justice Army t-shirt, Truth and Justice hats, and even the opportunity to co-host a Friday follow-up episode. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny, and it goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a case that you'd like us to consider covering, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is engage in our investigations. keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page, follow us on Instagram, or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. For all of you tweeters out there, you can connect with us on Twitter at Truth Justice Pod. To follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth, Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.